Good morning. It is February the 23rd, 2019, and this is Dan, and I'm drinking a little coffee here. So if I pause, don't let that shock you. As I've said before, it's funny, and it's something a lot of people don't think about until they're in this place. And before I continue, it's worth noting that the situation I'm describing is still eminently better than the situation for a lot of people around the world. So if you're going to claim, the whole first world white man problems bullshit, I don't give a fuck. Much of what we experience in this world is relative to our life. So even though I currently live in about 200 square feet, I do not have a job, I do not feel that at this point in time, I'm going to get hired for any kind of a job. Even though I do think it's much more likely than not that this time next year I'm homeless, it is also true that poverty in America isn't nearly as shitty as poverty in a lot of other places around the world. Now, you could say to yourself, well, what does that mean then? Does that mean we should all basically make being poor in America as bad as being poor in, I don't know, South Africa or Mexico? Maybe. If you have some crude sense of morality and a weird sense of equality, you might want to make the whole race, the whole human race, equally poor. That could be your goal. If you're a Marxist, I would say that's definitely your goal. You will achieve your final victory by essentially turning the entire human race, with the exception of some ruling class, into desperately poor people who have no resources to think, who have no resources to have time to think. A desperately poor mass of people who can simply work whatever shitty job that they're told to work. So this coffee thing may seem funny to you, but recently in my life, I haven't had a lot of money to buy coffee. It turns out that coffee is not super cheap, and like so many other choices you make in life, if it's between food and water and coffee, you're gonna get your food and water if you have common sense. In this particular case, I owe it to a friend of mine, a person in my life, a good person, who last weekend, amongst other things, including helping me with rent, also bought me some coffee. So it's kind of nice to have a cup of coffee, even two. It's nice to have that, but you also have to realize in your heart that it isn't a guaranteed thing. So I don't have a precise topic for this morning's podcast, but there is this desire to continue to discuss an issue that's difficult to discuss, an issue I broached in another podcast yesterday, that deals with being who you are. I don't think I'm the only person in America that feels isolated. I would even contend that the nature of the way that we are controlled now, in a lot of ways, is about convincing people that they are either part of an inside group, or they're part of this hinterland of isolated folks, the hermit couture, the group on the outside, the outsiders, the freaks, the weirdos. You're part of the noogity center that is staring at its phone all day, its smart device, at its tablet. You're part of that noogity center that has watered down its principles to the point that there are no principles. Or you're like me, you're an outcast. And this, in fairness to the shittiness of civilization at this point, I've always been an outcast and to some extent a hermit. Even at times in my life when I was a teenager and people would have said, Dan, you're so extroverted, to me it was a game, it wasn't real. I played the extroversion game because I figured out when I was a teenager that if you don't play the extroversion game, if you don't go out there and give speeches and have friends and participate in all the parties, there's only one direction for you, and that's oblivion. In fact, the word popular, you know, it's funny. The word popular is an interesting word. It's like popular culture. You know, people will say, well, do you have culture in America? Yes, we have popular culture. You know, it's one of those cases of where you get suckered into a mentality that unless everybody agrees about something, it's not worthy. But it's not the case that everybody's ever going to agree. That's not reality. Even in a perfectly programmed society, you're going to have people that fall off the edge of the table, so to speak. And for those people, whether it's popular culture or unemployment statistics, you're kind of left with this notion in your head that, well, those people don't matter, they don't exist. You know, there's an artist that I think many Americans are familiar with, an artist from the 1960s and 70s, and I forget when he died. I think he died sometime in the 80s, but I really don't remember when. But there's an artist that people should be familiar with by the name of Andy Warhol. And Andy Warhol was very much one of those people that popularized the notion of pop art, you know, art that is in fact a manifestation of art in the age of mechanical reproduction of the synthetic. He was very much a product of his age. I won't say that he was either a great artist or a terrible artist. I've seen some of his stuff. I've seen his, you know, I've seen his Campbell soup cans. I've seen his Marilyn Monroe, all of which is wonderful. And if I have to choose between that and a crucifix in urine, I would prefer Andy Warhol. But he was also kind of a kook in his own way. But he was the kook that people, I don't know how to phrase this, he was the kook that the society, whoever makes those decisions, decided was the right kook, you know, the kook we deserve. It is difficult to imagine contemporary art without Andy Warhol. It's not impossible, but it's difficult. Even Jackson Pollock, whose work precedes Andy Warhol's work by barely a decade or so, was a different kind of artist than Andy Warhol. You know, Jackson Pollock, as ridiculous or crazy as you might think his work was still in the realm of a human being moving about physically to participate in the art. Andy Warhol may have painted things, but he was painting things that could be produced in factories. Jackson Pollock was producing things that arguably you could not really produce in a factory, or at least not in a way that would be that easy. And again, that might not be true. You could create a machine, I suppose, that could splatter paint, and you could say, well, that's Jackson Pollock. But it really, really isn't. If you think Jackson Pollock is just a bunch of paint splattered on a, you know, splattered on a background, on a canvas, then I clearly think you're missing the point and you don't understand the art itself. But Andy Warhol, despite using paint, despite producing art the same way that many others produced it, was actually in conversation with a different reality, the reality of television, electronics, the reality of art as a manifestation of a machine. And what is this machine? You see, I think a lot of people will say to themselves these days, especially because of science fiction, that we're still in an age of human beings, that in some sense, the robot apocalypse is not here yet. But when I walk about the world today, when I interact with people, I gotta say, I think the robot apocalypse already arrived. I think the robot apocalypse isn't as much about robots taking over the world as turning people into essentially robots. I mean, what is the difference between Jackson Pollock and Andy Warhol? Well, one difference is there's a kind of natural chaos in Jackson Pollock. But in a weird way, Andy Warhol is like the Titan sphincter of the machine of industrial civilization. He's pooping out those things that fit with what would come next. Nobody is going to want this other reality because this other reality doesn't seem as real. And for young people who can only perceive the world through a tiny little screen, well, that's its own thing too. I was thinking about something I said yesterday, and I've said this before, that when it comes to issues of offensive speech, your best defense is to walk away. And if walking away means turning off a computer or simply closing a browser window or just going to another web page, whatever it is, you should just walk away. But it's almost as if young people are beginning to lose the notion of this idea that there's an off button. You know, one of the things about the world that Jackson Pollock grew up in, and I don't want to romanticize the guy because, yeah, he was likely a crazy drunk. And at times in my life, I've been a crazy drunk. But in the world of Jackson Pollock, it was simply the case that it wasn't just that there was an off button, but in many cases, there was never an on button to begin with. People could live lives in that day and age, and at most, they had a fucking telephone. Maybe they had a radio. Perhaps they had a TV. But they did not have this invasive 24/7 flow of data, you know, which, frankly speaking, might be good data, might be bad data. I really can't tell you. I have not done a formal study of the internet. To my knowledge, it's probably still the case that in raw gigabytes, most of the internet's still probably pornography. So take that as you will. But it appears as if a lot of people these days, and I think this is why they're getting suckered by the hate speech bullshit, they don't know or believe in the existence of an off button. When I was a kid, as crazy as this sounds, and I know there are 20-somethings out there said, oh boy, he just said when I was a kid, this is the time for me to escape, but I don't have an off button. You have an off button still. I think you still do. In the very least, you have electricity powering your shit. So if you don't know where the off button is, pull that fucking cord out of the wall. But yeah, when I was a kid, we would do things. We would go on little adventures. They may have been stupid adventures. I remember going out with my friends and my brothers and sisters. When I lived on Little Mountain in Mount Vernon, we would hunt for Bigfoot. I know that's crazy. I'm fairly certain, and this is just my opinion, that there is no Bigfoot. But when you're a kid, it's kind of exciting to go on those adventures. And we would, you know, hike around Little Mountain with our pellet guns and BB guns. Our BB guns. And hunt for Bigfoot. We would walk a mile or two to go to Little Mountain Store to play Donkey Kong. Now that's an interesting little prophetic statement. When I was a kid, when I was 10 and 11 years old, we would hike to Little Mountain Store because they had a video game. They had Donkey Kong. You know, we would watch each other play. It was fun to watch. It was fun even if you didn't have quarters. Because there was something amazing about this technology, it suckered us in, and it was kind of enjoyable. And at that point in time, it was still something that was not ever present, you know. It wasn't all the time inundating your consciousness 24/7, every single day of the week. You still had an off button. You still had the ability to escape. In our case, you could choose to just not walk the mile or two to Little Mountain Store on the trail. And the fact that there was a trail, it was almost like a strange little adventure. But at the end of the adventure, instead of, you know, meeting the kind witch or the wise king, we met a demon. And the demon was still very weak, still very weak, still very dependent upon our quarters, upon our, you know, the change in our pocket. But it was a demon nonetheless. It was there. It was real. But these are things that a lot of young people don't understand today. You know, they'll go walk a little distance to the store and think they went on an adventure. Well, yeah, okay, but you could go further. So this is one of those issues I think about on mornings like this. I think to myself, how much of a misfit am I? How little do I fit? You know, there's this derogatory phrase, white trash. You know, and white trash is what you would call rednecks and people that grow up in flyover country. It's what Hillary Clinton called the deplorables. You know, white, it really is. You know, when she was saying deplorable, she was saying white trash. Now, she couldn't get away with saying white trash, so she said deplorable. But we all know what she meant. And I'm not contending there aren't African Americans who have similar experiences. Listen, I'm not actually a racist. I think there are plenty of people of all ethnicities who grew up when I did, when there was still a world of the off button, when there was still a world where we actually shook hands. You know, shaking a hand is a very different experience from pushing a like button. I know when you're on Twitter or Facebook and you push that little like button, you think it's the same as shaking a hand, but it's not. Shaking a hand in that Marshall McLuhan sense is abundant with meaning. It is very hot in the McLuhan sense. Hot meaning filled with a kind of informational energy, experiential energy. It is not a cool medium to shake a hand. It is a hot medium to shake a hand. It is a much cooler medium to click that little fucking like button on Twitter. And in this context, I think cool does mean bad. Sure, when you're on social media, you get the dopamine hit. True, when you're there, you're probably getting all the right neurotransmitters at the right time. But hugging and shaking hands, that's not the same as liking somebody on Facebook. And for the lonely person at the other side, you might think that 100 likes or 1,000 likes is amazing. But I can promise you, there are people today who might have thousands of friends on Facebook, and the thing that would change their day more than anything else, and they probably don't even realize it, would be to push the fucking off button. Go to see an old friend and shake a hand or get a hug. That would be more powerful than that fucking like button. But this is the interesting question about the whole off button, the ability to turn something off. I think we are entering a period of time where the discards, the freaks, the white trash, the losers, the deplorables, all of us freaks, no matter our ethnicity, no matter our gender or our sexuality. I think there are plenty of gay men and women who understand what I'm talking about. They get it. It isn't about being gay or straight. But it is about this idea that there was once a day and age where it wasn't just the case that there was an off button, but there were far fewer on buttons. There were far fewer cases where you had to turn on technology. One of the things you discover when you become poor enough isn't simply that you can't afford coffee, but eventually you can't afford a mobile device. And I know you'll say, well, Dan, there are Obama phones and free phones. I'm gonna let you know a little secret. There is free shit for some people. Not that I think there should be free shit for anyone. And if I were king for a day, which is weird for an anarchist to say, but if I were king for a day, I would outlaw all welfare, starting with corporate welfare, you fucks. If you work for Boeing or Raytheon, if you work for Amazon or Google or Microsoft, if you work for the government, I'm sorry, but of all the welfare I would cut, the first kind of welfare I would cut would be the stuff that keeps you alive, and I'm sorry, you can go find another job like the rest of us, you fuck. But if you're going to tell me about the Obama phone, I hate to break it to you. There are people that get access to free shit. I don't personally know them, and I know it's not me. I know it's not me because recently I have been in such a pathetic place, I have sought help from any angle. My religion, my Christianity, people who care about me convince me that instead of just disappearing from existence, I should swallow my pride and attempt to go find some help, even if it means going to the fucking government, going to the crocodile, saying, "Please, Master Crocodile, I know that you spend most of your days stomping on my fucking dreams and my liberty, but please, Master Crocodile, will you give me some food? Will you give me some water? Will you give me some shelter?" So no, whatever protected classes there are, I am not a member of one. And maybe rightly so. Maybe it is the case that I am old white trash, and white trash should be thrown away. Maybe it's because, you know, I don't want to participate in the technological orgy, and I guess that's a good reason for tossing me in the bin. But maybe it's because I grew up in an age where it wasn't simply the case that there were lots of off buttons for things, and they were obvious. Off buttons were huge. You know, clicking out of something, getting away from something was easy. There wasn't even a click back then, really, except for unless, you know, when I was a teenager, you owned an Apple, right? An Apple computer. It wasn't just the case that there weren't as many on buttons or off buttons, but that we just didn't have as much technology around us, and I think that was healthier. You could escape from it. You weren't always trapped by the machine. Whatever the machine is, you know, as a person stuck in a kind of epistemological trap, I often repeat this general, you know, this general kind of rant or this general sort of thought process, I suppose. Whatever the machine is, it's difficult for me to know. And it's not just about technology. It is also people. But whatever it is a machine that has demands. And if you don't meet the machine's demands, you will be discarded. Now, you could counter, especially if you're a cultural anthropologist or a historian. You could say, "Dan, that's always been the way society operates." And actually, there's a lot of truth to that. Throughout the history of humanity, and I would contend throughout the history of organized social life, which includes creatures that aren't human, there's always been probably on some level an insider-outsider phenomena. And in times when humans are barely getting by, you know, if you're the kind of outsider that prevents the tribe from succeeding, it isn't simply a question of you know, taste, like I prefer wine over beer. It's a question of survival. I get it. On some basic level, if I were the atheist I once was, and I'm no longer an atheist, but if I was the atheist I once was, I would say I get it. Some people don't fit, and if you don't fit, you're going to be thrown away. Now, of course, when I was an atheist, I was dead inside. I was very dead. Sure, I was alive in that physical, mechanical sense. If you checked my pulse, I had a pulse. But beyond that, there wasn't much else going on. As so many atheists in our world today are, they're rather dead hulks. If you take away their smart device, if you take away their automobile, if you take away the idea that they're always going to have a job and that their home is always going to appreciate in value, and that their little Seattle reality might be bullshit. If you take that away, you'll find an empty husk. And really, you'll find the real madman or madwoman. If you want to find insanity, it isn't that hard. Just turn off the technology. It's one of the reasons why I think we're entering an age where it's not just that they're hiding the off button, but rather the off button is going to go away. They don't want to turn it off. Perhaps they can't. Perhaps we have multiple generations of people where if you threw the off button, like you pushed it, you threw off the things they depend upon, it's a case that they wouldn't survive, and it's not because they couldn't survive. I would contend something that a lot of you might not want to agree with. We have the ability on the entire planet to feed ourselves. We could feed ourselves. Yeah, could we have 50 kinds of toxic shit at, you know, cheap bottom prices at Walmart that give us anal cancer? Probably not. We wouldn't have as much shit that gives us cancer because it simply wouldn't function correctly. But if we needed to feed people, we could. Would it require some more physical exercise? Of course. And how is that a bad thing? Would it require more people to interact, not on social media, but in the actual world, the social world? Yes, it would. Even hermits like myself would be forced to interact. Wow, that sounds terrible. But it would also probably be a happier society. It would probably be a society where people feel more fulfilled. It would probably be a world where people wouldn't give a shit that there is no on or off button because it wouldn't make any sense. Now, does that imply logically that I am calling for the abolition of technology? No. If you think that's what I'm calling for, you're really missing the fucking point. But I guess I am asking for something that might be almost as impossible and ridiculous. I'm asking that people take control of their technology, take control of the devices. The device doesn't own you. Somebody says to you, "Why don't you have a mobile device?" Well, why don't you ask them, "Why do I need one?" And then they say, "Well, you have to be connected." And you should counter with, "What does that mean to be connected?" I was 30 years old, basically, before I got my first mobile phone. And it's funny because mobile phones had been around for a while. And a lot of people I knew, especially in the army, the officers, they had either mobile phones or they had beepers. Beepers used to be a fucking thing. I was 30 years old before I had a mobile device, and I have to say, on a basic level, I'm not sure it made my life any better. There was a day and age where people would leave their homes without a phone. There was a day and age where people would leave their homes without a GPS tracking device, without an ability to look up a Google map and find out where they're going. There was a day and age where people would ride the bus and they didn't need a phone to tell them when the bus would arrive. Yeah, I agree. It meant sometimes you were a couple minutes early or late, but to be blunt, I still see people with their fucking smart devices who are a few minutes early or a few minutes late. There was a day and age where we could walk in the world without a device on us. And I still do, FYI. I know that sounds crazy. I know it sounds insane. Dan, how could you possibly leave your home without a phone? Well, because it's really that easy. And if you come back to me and say, "Well, Dan, don't you think that's dangerous?" I would say, "Aren't you the motherfucker who is constantly telling me how crime goes down and there is no more this and no more that and everything's so great? So please, stupid motherfucker, can you entertain two thoughts in your head at the same time that contradict each other? It seems like you are afraid of that." But the reality is this: if you're going to tell me that the streets are safe, that there's no crime out there really anymore, that modern society is such a fucking wonderful thing, then why the fuck would I have to carry my phone around all the time? If you're going to tell me that we're all so much healthier and everything's so much better, why the fuck do we need so many fucking vaccinations? Please tell me, you stupid fuck. If you're going to tell me that our food is so much better than it was 100 years ago, then please explain to me all the people I've known in my life who either have cancer or have had it and died from it, if our food is so fucking great. So yeah, I sometimes leave my apartment without a phone. And actually, I carry a flip phone. I know. It still technically runs a little computer operating system. It really isn't like a mobile device from the 1990s, but I carry a flip phone. Why do I do it? Because it is the minimal investment in participation whereby I can still get a job. And yet at the same time, I don't have to pretend that that little device is me or that I need it. I don't need it. There are things humans need. You need food, you need water, you need shelter. Before you get your smartphone, before we produce millions of smartphones, we should make sure there's not one fucking person living on the streets. Before you tell me, well, that's all by choice. Oh my God, please come to Little Saigon, you fuck. I'll take you on a tour. We'll have conversations with the people who are on the streets. Yeah, you'll find people who are crazy. Just like if you go to Goldman Sachs and one of the C-suites, you'll find crazy motherfuckers there. You'll find people who use drugs. Oh, I hate to break it to you. If you're a software engineer at Amazon, you'll find motherfuckers doing cocaine and using meth and microdosing LSD there, you stupid fuck. You'll find lazy people. Holy fuck. Come to Boeing. Come to Raytheon. Fucking go to a government office. You'll find lazy fuckers with jobs. So please leave your stupid perspective before you go. But you'll also find families. You'll also find children. You'll also find people who are struggling just to exist. And they are not there because they want to be. They are there because it is the situation they find themselves in. Before we say to ourselves, we need 5G and phones everywhere, maybe we should say to ourselves, let's first make sure there aren't any homeless people. Like, if we're such an advanced society, if we really do care, before we build another smart bomb or a micro nuke or a 5G antenna, before we decide that we need a phone in every hand, why don't we make sure there's food in every hand? But you see, that's the thing. When it comes to this kind of machine, and that's all I can call it, is the machine, because what do you call it? If you're religious like I am, you might call it the Antichrist. And I gotta say that the weird nexus of corporations and the government at this point in human history, that seems to me to be the Antichrist. I don't think the Antichrist is a person, okay? I'm sorry. I really don't think so. I think that the devil's a bit more sophisticated than that. I know it makes good poetry to grossly interpret the Bible and pretend that there's going to be some person that comes along, but I think that's propaganda too. It's like the Omen movies. They want you to believe it's some dude because you can kill some dude, right? You know, even if the dude has superpowers, even if the dude can bend your mind, it's still a dude. It might be the child of the devil. It might be a Nephilim. A child of angels, but it's still some fucking dude. But what if the Antichrist is actually the machine? The network, the connectedness, the phone in every hand, the smart device being stared at all the time, from the moment you wake up till the moment you die. And then someone comes along and says, Dan, you know, why do we need an off button? Why do we need that? You know, why can't we just inject you with nanites that connect you directly to the network? And then there is no off button. There never will be another off button. You won't be able to escape. Even if you're climbing Mount Everest, you will still be plugged in. So yeah, I'm kind of a freak. And I don't think I'm the only freak out there. As I've said in other podcasts, I think there are others like me. But the system, the machine, will tell you, well, you're just a freak, and there's very few like you, Dan. Very few. But in the last few weeks, I've met at least a half a dozen. In the last few weeks, a half a dozen people, and I won't name their names because that's what motherfuckers do, but in the last few weeks, about 6-7 people have reached out to me from my SoundCloud technology channel, from my podcast of evil silicon bits. They've reached out to me to tell me that, yeah, Dan, you're not alone. Maybe we don't all agree on everything, and from talking to them on the phone, we don't. We don't all agree on everything. Actually, to me, that's a positive, that's a good thing. That actually indicates that we are very much alike. Because if we did agree on everything, we would be another one of the pod people, another one of these members of the amorphous mass of zombies that wander the streets staring at their glowing rectangles. But no, we don't all agree on everything. But what we do agree on is this basic notion that something is inherently wrong. That the human condition has been turned into something grotesque. That we are a homunculus of pop-up ads and social media, synthetic dreams. There's something missing. And with the empty space of what is missing, it's been filled in with something terrible. I don't know what to tell you, folks. One of the confusing things about my existence is I'm often in a really great mood when I realize that my life might be on the verge of exploding. You know, right now, I have bought myself respite. Respite meaning a bit of safety, a bit of peace. And when I say bought myself, I didn't pay for it. Unless you want to say I paid for it with my pride. I have received help from some people in the last couple of weeks, and it's not all been financial. In many cases, like the half a dozen folks who've reached out to me, it's been spiritual, it's been mental, it's been, you know, a communication with other people who, like me, know that something's wrong, but are still figuring it out. They know something's wrong, but they're tired of the fucking Matrix cliches, like Keanu Reeves is gonna come along and save you. Folks, Keanu Reeves is not gonna fucking save you. There is no Neo. Even the Matrix movie was a fucking lie. But we all know that there's a lie. And so if you ask me as a Christian, what do I think the lie is? The lie is the lie of the Antichrist. And if you want to know what the Antichrist is, when I use the word the machine, or I should say the phrase the machine, it is for me, in religious terms, very much the Antichrist. The government, the corporations, the system of control, that is not simply the beast system, but the system itself is the beast. And it isn't to say that technology's bad, because throwing away all technology would be just as insane. But who is in control? I would contend when I was a kid, adults were still in control of technology. A mother or a father could say, go out and play, turn off the fucking TV set. Maybe they wouldn't say fucking, but yeah, some people grew up with parents like that. There was still a point in time in the human story where people didn't simply have off buttons, but that they would push them. And if it wasn't the kid that pushed one, it was the adult. There were still spaces for young people to have authentic imagination, not the weird imagination that gets produced on the darkest corners of the internet, not the imagination that's really fed by the beast, but actual imagination that comes from that part of your soul, your dignity, your mind that God gave you. God provided. Not Bill Gates, not Steve Jobs when he was still alive, not Elon Musk, not Zuckerberg, not any of these motherfuckers, not fucking Jeff Bezos. You cannot go to Amazon and order your dignity. I am very sorry. There is no way to order your freedom on Amazon. You can order all sorts of fucking things from Amazon, but you can't order those things that are most important. Which is interesting, isn't it? When I was a kid, you could still say no to technology, even if it excited you. When I was a teenager, you know, I had a brief flirtation with computers, but in truth, I didn't get into computers until I was 30, really. But when I was a teenager, I was very interested in technology, at least in philosophical terms and science fiction terms. But, you know, even then, it was something you could walk away from. You know, your Walkman was a thing you carried, but it wasn't necessarily a thing that carried you. And now, when I see people walking down the streets with their little phone in front of them, I think of a carrot on a stick. I think of something pulling them. I don't think of them as being self-directed agents. I think of them as being kind of suckered into a game. And all of this makes me crazy. This is the other thing, too. If you're listening and you're listening on your smart device and you're saying to yourself, well, Dan, you're just a Luddite. You're crazy. You know, you want to go back to some special age that never existed. No, folks, I don't pretend that some special age existed. But what I will tell you is that in raw terms, I can remember a time where most of my life wasn't just about technology. I can remember a time when social media was people going to meet with each other someplace, where a bunch of teenagers would hang out at a diner until 2 a.m. drinking coffee and talking about the world and their future. I can remember a day and age when we made our own fun, and making our own fun, whether it was a cardboard submarine or whether it was on going on an adventure to hunt fucking Bigfoot with a BB gun, it was different. It was powerful. It was immersed in imagination. Your brain had to think all the time, every second. And it was the kind of thinking that energized you. It didn't drain you. It didn't suck all the life out of you. And what is kind of scary is I'm almost 50 years old, but some would say, well, that's not too old, Dan. So if it's not too old, isn't it scary that I can remember that other time? Others like me maybe can as well. And yet, there are millions, billions of people alive today who have no clue that that time existed. For them, it's like, well, we hate Facebook, but we can't live without it. Well, we don't like Twitter, but we have to have it. Yeah, the internet can be shit, but we can't live without it. And that off button, Dan, that you keep talking about, that needs to go away. I grew up in a world where not simply there were more off buttons, but there were fewer things that needed one. And so life, actual life, real life, authentic life was on most of the time still. The technology might have been off, but the brain was on. The technology might have been off, but the body was on. The technology might have been turned off, but existence was energized. I remember that world. You can tell me that your Kindle device gives you more books. Well, maybe it does, but here's the thing, though. If you think that there's not going to come a time where Kindle's going to be edited and censored, you're a fucking fool. It's coming. If the Canadians think it makes fucking sense to tell people that you can't say he, she, him or her, man or woman, then I promise you, it's coming to the point at some point when your little Kindle library will suddenly have edits, and there will be books that will be missing altogether. And then you'll come back and say, well, Dan, a book like Mein Kampf, for example, written by Adolf Hitler, shouldn't be available. And you know what? I hate Hitler, okay? And I read Mein Kampf when I was in school because I was studying history, and it's shit. But by the same token, I believe in free speech. And like Voltaire once said, I might disagree, and I'm paraphrasing a bit, I might disagree with every word that you say, but I would fight to my death to defend your right to say it, just as I would defend my right to say it as well if you disagreed. But yeah, your little Kindle library that you think has empowered you, for now, maybe. I mean, it's kind of like the first Apple computers. I think they probably were empowering, mostly because the portion of your existence that they absorbed was still small. Even for the super geek, even for the huge super geek, the super geek still needed to go someplace to get the latest device. It wasn't delivered to their door. They had to go someplace to buy that new modem or something. Even the super geek was forced to go into the world, to leave the beast, even if for just a few hours. I grew up in a world where it wasn't simply the case that there were off buttons, but the off buttons were so obvious. The on buttons were so obvious. That's the world I grew up in. And now, as I get older and I realize that if I don't have a mobile device, I more or less can't get a job, then I realize that they want the on button and the off button removed. They want us to be on all the time. And of course, you could come back and say, well, Dan, aren't you a podcaster? And aren't you plugged in? And don't you surf the web, when you're unemployed? And I am unemployed. I'm still looking for work, but I'm unemployed. Aren't you a computer programmer, Dan? Yeah, that's true. I program computers when I can find work. When I'm not being interviewed by assholes who basically treat me like shit because I didn't grow up in Bangalore. Yeah, I'm a computer programmer when they hire someone like me, and they're not hiring people like me much anymore. Hate to break it to you. Hate to break your little world view, you fuck. All that's true. But even if it is true, it doesn't negate what I'm saying. The machine is the beast, folks. If you keep the beast under control, it's like the beast has always been. It's been something that's there, but it doesn't take over your life. In fact, the beast under control, the devil under control, is akin to a French bulldog. French bulldogs are annoying as fuck. They vomit and they shit and they eat their own vomit and they eat their own shit. Their farts smell like the crap that you would talk about when you were in the army training in nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare. The first time I smelled a French bulldog fart, I wanted to go gas, gas, gas. And if you were in the army, you know what I'm talking about. But the French bulldog is also a pathetic little creature. The French bulldog cannot reproduce on its own. Among the many features that limit the power of the French bulldog, its own arrogance, its own stupidity, its own helplessness are the reason why I don't fear the French bulldog. And the devil is very similar. You know, the devil, the whole power of Satan isn't actually power. The Satan has no physical power over you. Satan really doesn't, okay? Demons do not have physical power over you. This is part of the rules of the game. And yeah, it is a game in a way, and maybe you don't like that analogy, but these are the rules. The devil cannot make you do anything. You have free will. Demons cannot make you do anything. You have free will. But man, are they deceptive, like the French bulldog. Man, will they bleat when they need to bleat? They will use every tool at their disposal that they can use, which is manipulation, which is whispering. The devil will whisper in your ears, and if you don't know where the off button is, then the devil will whisper in your ears 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I'll leave you with that thought about on buttons and off buttons. I'll leave you with this weird podcast. I know that it was a bit all over the place, and I am sorry for that. You know, if you're used to listening to me, you know that I tend to sometimes go on these stream of consciousness journeys, and this was one of them. But it is very much related to the podcast I did yesterday about being who you are and defending who you are. Because one aspect of defending who you are is knowing how to defend yourself. And when it comes to spiritual warfare, especially in 2019, a big part of that spiritual warfare is knowing how to turn the machine off. Okay? Yeah, technology's progressing to the point, and frankly, society is devolving to the point where they're going to want to put the computer inside of you, where they're going to want to put the machine inside of you. They're going to want to put the beast inside of you, and you'll never be able to turn it off. Okay? You can walk away from your French bulldog, but they're going to want to put a little French bulldog in your head that will bleat all the time, that will fart all the time, and that will convince you all the time that you should be like everybody else. And I can't tell you that we're going to win. You know, if you read the Bible, especially Revelations, and Revelations is not the only place for prophecy. Prophecies, you know, the thing about the Bible and its wisdom is if you read it correctly, you should reread it. Let me repeat that statement. If you read the Bible the way you should, you shouldn't just read it once. Even the same passage, you should read 10 times. But throughout the Bible, you're going to find prophecy. And yeah, if you interpret prophecy a certain way, for a while the beast wins. And yeah, if I were looking around the world today, I would say the beast is winning. Satan is winning. If you want to be on the winning side, if you don't want to be an underdog, if you don't want to be discarded like a deplorable, you know, like white trash, if you're like me and don't believe that you can go into a voting booth and fix anything, that the choice between Trump and Hillary is a choice between herpes and chlamydia. If you're like me and you see it that way, then truly the beast is winning. You know that the beast is winning right now. You must have eyes to see and ears to hear, but you can tell that the beast is winning. Walk down the fucking street. Ask yourself, how many crosses do you see around people's necks? And then ask yourself, how many people are in prayer to that little device in the palm of their hand? The beast is winning. But that doesn't mean the beast has to win, and also it doesn't mean the beast will. Every war contains, usually, almost invariably, but not always, but every war contains multiple battles, and some of these battles are lost. But there are still battles ahead, and even if it's just a battle for your own soul, it's a battle worth fighting. So, to all of you out there, all of you freaks and misfits, all of you people that do not fit and feel toxified by this reality as if you can't breathe existentially, but you don't know how to find the air to breathe and you're looking for it, I'm not claiming I have a source of oxygen. But what I will tell you is this. If you turn off your device, if you leave it at home, if you go for a walk today with no device, I think your life will be a little better, not a little worse. Now, is it possible you get labeled a freak? Maybe. But on the other hand, you can carry a little block of wood if you want to. In fact, I thought about selling something recently. Selling a little block of wood, you know, painted to make it look like a Samsung Android or an Apple or whatever. And you can have that little block of wood in your hand, and better yet, you could have a cross on it. So you're looking at the cross, and people will look at you and they'll say, oh, that's just another zombie like me. And it would take a rather discerning motherfucker, most of whom are so immersed in their technology, they're incapable of discernment, but it would take a discerning motherfucker to look over your shoulder and see you're just staring at a cross. But yeah, I've had this weird thought of designing a little tiny wooden thing that has a cross on it, or maybe even a biblical passage. And you can carry this little piece of wood, this inert piece of wood that has no 5G, 4G, 6G, that connects to nothing except for your imagination. And other people can look at you and say, well, that's just another person like me. And in that sense, you will be safe. Because if you ever do walk down the street these days like I do sometimes, without a phone, without a block of wood, just walking down the street and looking into the distance at eye level and seeing where you're going, the zombies see you for who you are. The freaks, the actual freaks, in my opinion, the robots, the pod people, those who are connected to the beast, they see you. They mark you. Anywho, have a great day, and I'll probably talk to you later.